Hello to you all and welcome to Viewpoints on this week's show. Indigenous practices are used for the first time in a Canadian military court-martial.
For our client, the sacred eagle feather was a very important mechanism to allow proper participation at the court-martial.
Seniors living on the west coast of Newfoundland are amongst the poorest in the country, according to a seniors advocate.
Seniors in central and western are even worse off financially than the province of Newfoundland and Labrador overall. The poor seniors live in central, and then next to them is western. So every dollar counts.
A fundraising event in Manitoba becomes a springboard for important conversations about mental health, accessibility, and art.
Art doesn't take away or cure our mental health challenges, but it works with you to create a space that centers you.
A brewing company in Smithers, BC is awarded Best Brewery in Canada.
Organizers pulled me aside and he's like, have you figured it out yet? I'm like, figured what out? And, Brewery of the Year, do you have a speech ready? I'm like, do I have a what?
Musician Tom Wilson celebrates National Indigenous Peoples Day in a concert featuring the Mohawk Symphony.
I have to paint. I have to play music. I have to write words. They're all friendly neighbors.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome to the show. My name is Boris Chassaigne. A pleasure to have you with us again this week. The Mood Disorders Association of Manitoba held its Minds in Bloom fundraiser last month. The association's executive director, Rita Jahal, says the event was a tremendous success, but she's also excited by the fact that the event became a springboard for greater conversations around mental health and how art can heal. That's something James Dixon understands. He's from Artbeat Studios. He says art offers a sense of quiet, is quieting minds, and it helps people ground themselves. Here's Ryan Funk in Winnipeg, Manitoba, speaking with Rita Jahal.
Besides wanting it to be a fundraiser, we also wanted to be part of that conversation and have community engagement so that people can continue on this a path of normalizing the conversation around mental health.
The Minds in Bloom fundraiser hosted a panel with mental health experts, exploring a variety of different topics important to the field here in Manitoba.
Now, that was an incredible panel that we put together. The leaders in our mental health sector talked about the infrastructure and some of the gaps that exist, but also the opportunities that exist within our province around policy, around innovation, around where how funding is allocated.
She says a significant avenue from which the conversation has evolved is centered around the use of art. For those living with anxiety, depression, or other mental health challenges, finding focus can be difficult, but James Dixon of Artbeat Studios says art offers a sense of quiet.
And we talk a lot of folks who have anxiety, or we have folks who have schizoid affective disorder, or we have folks who have lived depression. And art, the act of making art, that physicality, whether it's a pen on paper, whether it's a brush with paint, whether it's whatever your practice, whatever medium you choose to engage with, that practice can be very centering for folks and can kind of take a lot of that noise that a lot of folks experience in their heads.
Dixon has worked with many who have faced serious mental health challenges and says he has seen firsthand how the creative process has helped people heal.
Art doesn't take away or cure our mental health challenges, but it does work to help, it works with you to create a space that centers you.
At MDAM itself, Jahal says art has played a pivotal role and something she's reflected on personally.
My background is in a degree in science with a minor in music. So, that's always been part of my thinking, that art has plays such an important part, whether it's performing arts or visual arts or any form that people can be creative.
The Minds in Bloom event helped raise funds for MDAM's numerous programs, such as MADCAMP, where youth aged 12 to 17 utilize the power of art.
Well, it's incredible the difference that these activities make for them. They make lifelong friends, they stay together, and they want to continue doing it all year round. So it's really worked well for us.
More than support, art helps build identity and independence. Dixon says creating art gives people ownership of their healing, especially for those in transition.
The act of creating art builds confidence in folks. We work with a lot of folks who are, are in a transitional place. They're folks who are maybe getting their footing back, sort of stepping back out into the world. And art has been a great way for our participants to find self-confidence and to find a way to express themselves. Because before, sometimes folks might keep it all bottled up inside.
This was also what many artists who participated in Minds in Bloom had expressed.
A number of artists that we spoke with and chose to share their story personally with us, they were very emotional about it, and that no one had ever given them. So I think, well, there are definitely art therapy strategies, and again, from a clinical perspective, we want to go with it. But for us, it was more about that support as a coping strategy as part of the peer support that we provide.
Another important conversation that was spurred on by Minds in Bloom is the many barriers those seeking help face. One major challenge: access. Even when mental health programs exist, people often face obstacles just getting there.
And we hear a lot of that first-hand experience of the struggles they have every day. And it's actually not even about mental health. It's about how they access programs that are available, whether it's trying to get a bus ticket, whether it's trying to connect with someone for proper medications. A lot of folks find that they get pushed to all these different points around the city. The gap is physical for some, having to go from downtown all the way to St. Vital to get one thing and then to come back to downtown to access services for something else.
That's where wraparound supports come in. It's a type of approach where you offer multiple services under one roof. Rita says this can save time and prevent stress.
Community decision makers, corporates can look at innovative ways to provide that level of continuity and accessibility to those most in need. In a wraparound service, you might not need everything that an organization provides, but you might need three or four, whether it's getting that bus ticket and knowing and maybe where some of the resources are for medical intervention, to learning how to those life skills or, finding affordable housing.
The work at MDAM and ArtBeat isn't over. The two organizations have continued discussions about future collaborations, particularly in how organizations can provide support despite limited resources.
I don't believe in reinventing wheels. I think if somebody else does something better, and I think it's good for our clients, I'm going to go to them and say, you know what, let's work on this together. You guys do this better. We can do this part. Let's work on it. And that's exactly what happened with our partnership, is that there was no need for us to reinvent wheels. It just made sense.
I'm Ryan Funk.
Tune to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
Seniors living on the west coast of Newfoundland and Labrador are amongst the poorest in the country. At a yearly income of $27,800, Newfoundland and Labrador seniors have the lowest median income in Canada and the highest number of seniors receiving the Guaranteed Income Supplement, which is an indicator of poverty. This is according to seniors advocate Susan Walsh, who released a status report on recommendations her office has made to government. Details with Tonya Oregon in Cornerbrook.
At 27,800, seniors in this province have the lowest median income in Canada and the highest number of seniors receiving the Guaranteed Income Supplement, which is an indicator of poverty. Seniors are also challenged with getting and affording much-needed home support. Last week, seniors advocate Susan Walsh released a status report on recommendations her office has made to government. Walsh says there's progress, but it's not enough.
But it's on our old recommendations, the one in our first report, which was 2019. So, you know, we're hopeful to see more concerted, you know, that this is a good direction and that we're headed in that direction, and we'd like to see that continue for our more updated recommendations.
Walsh says West Coast seniors are among the poorest in this province.
Seniors in Central and Western are even worse off financially than the province of Newfoundland and Labrador overall. The poor seniors live in Central, and then next to them is Western. So every dollar counts. So my second point in the news release was really about, look, one way you could make life financially a little easier for our lower income seniors is making home support free.
Home support is free in most Canadian provinces. Newfoundland Labrador's population of seniors aged 65 and older will increase by about 30% by the year 2032. Reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
A military court-martial in Sydney is drawing attention to being the first of its kind in Canadian history to incorporate Indigenous cultural practices. Cape Breton Highlander Corporal Kendra Christmas recently appeared before a military court-martial at the Victoria Park Armouries in Sydney, where she faced charges of sexual assault against another service member, dishonorable behavior, and drunkenness. It was by all accounts a standard court-martial. However, certain changes were made to accommodate and respect Christmas Indigenous cultural heritage and practices. More with Jacob Postlewaite in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
Major Carlos De Cruz and Lieutenant Colonel Andreas Bullock represented Christmas at the trial. De Cruz says after learning Christmas was Indigenous, they discovered a gap in the military legal system.
Basically, what we identified was that there's a gap in the regulations. If you look at our Queen's regulations and orders, they list out two ways that you can become, you know, to testify as a witness and how to indicate that you'll tell the truth. One is through a religious oath, and the other is through an affirmation, non-religious. Historically, we use the Bible, the Christian Bible, as part of the religious oath. That seemed to be the de facto norm. So for our client, that wouldn't work. So we found an opportunity here to bring this to the court's attention.
De Cruz says they found this gap to be an opportunity to address these concerns, and after receiving approval from Christmas, the two lawyers raised the issue with the trial judge, Military Judge Colonel Stephen Strickey, who invited them to make a formal application. De Cruz says while making the application, they looked to the use of Indigenous practices in other courts outside of the military.
So we brought a formal written application earlier this year. When we attended for the application, we brought all the evidence that we needed to bring in support of the application. While it's the first of its kind that we're aware of in the military justice system, that's not to say that we're the first in Canada across all courts. In fact, we were taking, we were modeling our application from other courts in Canada, including Nova Scotia, where the use of certain Indigenous practices had already been incorporated, like the use of the sacred eagle feather. And so for our client, the sacred eagle feather was a very important mechanism to allow proper participation at the court-martial.
When Christmas took the stand to testify in the trial, she swore her oath on a sacred eagle feather. The court also adopted the oath that came alongside the eagle feather. Christmas held an eagle feather while she testified and continued to hold it following her testimony. Smudging ceremonies were also conducted in the morning before the day's proceedings would begin. De Cruz says the unit in Nova Scotia worked with them to source an eagle feather. He also pointed out that military court-martials are ad hoc, with no standing court, making each court-martial different, so other court-martials could incorporate Indigenous practices in other ways or forms in the future. De Cruz then shared his personal feelings about having been a part of the effort to incorporate Indigenous practices.
I don't know if it's set in just yet. We, as defense counsel, we do everything for our clients within our arcs, obviously, professional and ethical, to make sure that they're properly represented in court. Obviously, I'm quite supportive of this application, but our job as defense counsel is to advance our clients' interests, and we did that here. It happens to be that our personal views are 100% aligned with our clients, and as it turns out, with this court martial. So it's good for our clients, rather than saying, that this is a me or an us thing. This is really a great outcome for our client, but also for other Indigenous members in the Canadian Forces who may find themselves, having to deal with a matter at a court martial. So this was a great opportunity for Indigenous people and reconciliation with Canada. It's a small, but I would say an important milestone that we're now aligning ourselves with our civilian counterparts.
The trial has not yet concluded. Christmas will return to the court martial on August 19th for sentencing. I'm Jacob Postlewaite.
At age 66, Indigenous musician Tom Wilson celebrated National Indigenous Peoples Day in Picton with a concert featuring the Mohawk Symphony. The concert took place at the Regent Theatre and featured five string players, a percussionist, and a piano player led by conductor Darcy Heppner. Tom played some of his well-known songs, but with a symphonic twist, treated the audience to duos with his multi-talented son, Thompson, and spoke passionately about his Mohawk heritage. Wilson received the Order of Canada in 2023 and also won a Juno Award back in 2020. He co-founded the bands Junkhouse and Lee Harvey Osmond. He also frequently collaborates with Blackie and the Rodeo Kings. Brenda Little and Wellington Times reporter Ramesh Porin both met up with Wilson.
There was a different beat in Picton on Saturday when Tom Wilson of Junkhouse fame led an open drum circle celebrating National Indigenous Peoples Day. Later, he performed a powerful concert with the Mohawk Symphony led by conductor Darcy Heppner at the Regent Theatre. The seven-piece ensemble added a different feel to his familiar songs, and when his multi-talented son Thompson joined him, their Blackie and the Rodeo Kings influence was very distinct. Throughout the concert, Tom spoke frequently of his Mohawk bloodline that he discovered only 12 years ago, and how he celebrates it with his artwork, his best-selling novel, Beautiful Scars, and his powerful music. Sunday was an intimate event at the Hatch Gallery in Bloomfield, where Tom's art is featured, and we were treated to some music by Tom and his son, Thompson. Wellington Times reporter Ramesh Puran and I chatted with Tom about his music and his art. But first, Tom talks about his connection with conductor Darcy Heppner.
You know, he's just such a nice guy. You know, he's like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. So he was the guy. I mean, I also brought him in for a session with the Cowboy Junkies years ago. And he kind of looks like the high school geography teacher, right? But when he plays, he's got so much soul. You know, it's just like, it's phenomenal what comes out of that guy.
Where did the inspiration come for you for this type of music?
Oh, probably complete boredom with what I was doing. Which is a funny factor, but it's a real thing. It's as artists, you know, we're always looking for other outlets. As I said, when we were Tommy Thompson and I were performing, people think, oh, well, you're an artist. Oh, and you're a musician. Oh, I see. It's like, no, it's all the same energy. It's just, you know, where you guide that energy and how you nurture it and how you let it expose itself. So the orchestra was something that accompanied the release of my first book, Beautiful Scars. I was looking for an opportunity to be able to present that book with music and with writing, and this was the perfect way to do it.
Is this the first time you've worked with an ensemble?
No, we've been doing it. Well, I've done things with orchestras before, and it's been terrible experiences, only because of the formality of it. I had to kind of get used to. I'd love to be doing this more, bottom line. I would do this a whole tour of this if I could.
So how do your music, art, and writing interrelate?
Well, that's a good question. You can't force the creative process. I say, if you don't feel like doing this, don't. Which doesn't mean don't do it for in your life. If you don't feel like creating something that wasn't there yesterday, then don't do it. Wait until the inspiration, wait until you have to do it. I have to paint. I have to play music. I have to write words. I have to be doing this. They are all they're all friendly neighbors. Let's just put it that way, you know?
In your paintings here, there's an eye motif that...
Yeah.
What is the significance of that in your paintings?
Something we can all relate to, you know? The music I write, the books I write, the paintings I make, you know, are not supposed to leave a giant question mark. They've got to invite you in. When we meet somebody, when we fall in love, we look into somebody's eyes. I'm sorry I have sunglasses on right now. But we look into somebody's eyes. It's the connection that we can make. So if I'm creating art, I'm going to give you an eye to be able to make contact with so that you can, you know, be engaged with the rest of the painting, no matter what it is, you know.
At this point in your career, what do you see as your goal or purpose?
Getting some sleep. my goal now is feeling the blood that runs through me. So I was always Mohawk. I just found out that I was Mohawk. I just acknowledged it. The cosmos delivered that to me only 12 years ago. Now, it's to honor that. My job is to honor the Mohawk culture, is to bring it into a light every time I speak or perform or create art.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, I'm Brenda Little.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
Andy Smithers Brewing Company has been awarded one of the highest honors in Canadian craft beer, taking some of the coveted Brewer of the Year title at the 2025 Canadian Brewing Awards held last weekend in Vancouver. The local favorite secured the top distinction after winning 6 medals across multiple individual categories. Now in its 26th year, the Canadian Brewing Awards celebrate excellence in craft brewing. SBC head brewer Cam McKagan shared his disbelief with journalist Pamela Hassan in Smithers, British Columbia.
This year's competition featured more than 1,600 entries from nearly 270 breweries spanning 50 categories from traditional English ale to spicier offerings like chili beer. Smithers Brewing Company won bronze in the Irish Stout category, silvers in the Creative, Scotch Ale, and Berliner Weiss and Gose category, and 2 golds came home to Smithers in the Irish Red as well as English Mild and Brown Ale category. Here's Smithers Brewing Company's head brewer, Cam McKagan, last Tuesday.
We didn't figure out, like, until at the gala when the awards were being doled out, one of the organizers pulled me aside and he's like, have you figured it out yet? I'm like, no. Figured what out? And, Brewery of the Year, do you have a speech ready? I'm like, do I have a what? My name's Cam McKagan. I am the head brewer and part owner of Smithers Brewing Company.
Okay. Canadian Brewery of the Year. What do you think that this does for, one, the brewery, and then, two, for Smithers to bring home a title like that?
I mean, for the brewery, it kind of puts us on the craft beer map. Us and a lot of our friends up here are often overlooked in the craft beer scene just because we're so damn hard to get to.
Yeah.
So it does kind of, like, at the very least, there are a lot of people around Canada right now and in BC, you know, looking at Google Maps and being like, oh, that's where Smithers is. But I don't know, it just kind of, like, both for the town and for the brewery, it sort of just puts us on the map. And for the town, it does it about a week after Tony Hawk was here. So it's just like all of a sudden people are not only going to be Googling where is Smithers, but they're like, what are they doing up there?
How likely did you think it was going to be that you were going to, was it 6?
It was 6 medals. And the Brewery of the Year is just, like, it goes to the brewery that brings home the most individual medals. So, yeah. Like, We didn't know we'd won six. So we didn't go into it kind of like, I think we got this in the bag. The Canadian Brewing Awards, they kind of give you the nod, and they're sort of like, hey, it would be a good idea for you to attend. And also, if you could bring a couple of these beers, and they list the beers, it would be like, you know, it would be beneficial. We'd really appreciate it if you could bring some of these beers for us all to drink. And so that kind of tells you that, like, those beers have won awards, but they kind of didn't give us much more than that. We didn't figure out, like, until at the gala when the awards were being doled out, one of the organizers pulled me aside and he's like, have you figured it out yet? And like, no, figured what out? And, brewery of the year, do you have a speech ready? I'm like, do I have a what? He's like, oh, well, we're going to announce it in like 20 minutes. So, like, you better start working on your speech.
So, the beers that you won for, were they mostly like traditional styles? What's the secret to crafting something beautifully that a lot of people know what it tastes like and what it should taste like?
I mean, the thing with those beers is it kind of isn't a secret. Like, a handful of those styles have been around for well over a century, some of them longer than that. And they're recipes of the big breweries that have, like, that are famous for producing those styles are readily available on the internet. And it's more just kind of technique and process and, you know, sourcing the ingredients from the places where, you know, like, the beer is from. Like, our Irish Red and our Irish Stout both won medals in this recent one, and we bring in malt from the British Isles, we bring in hops from the British Isles, right? And we adjust our water profile to be more or less like, I use Cork water, I don't use Dublin water. Cork, for those of you who aren't sure, Cork is a county in Ireland, as well as a city in Ireland. I don't put actual corks in the water. It is just like taking the time, doing the research, getting the fine details right, and going through enough of the research where, you know, I didn't just copy and paste a recipe for any of these beers. It was just going through the research and finding the respected brewers who had, like, put literature on the internet and kind of synthesizing my own take on everything that's already out there. As far as, like, you know, we're kind of known in the industry as, or like in our little corner of the industry, as kind of like beer lunatics, and like we're doing, you know, weird stuff. And, you know, my philosophy with that has always been, well, learn how to do the base beer properly first, and then, you know, once you've got the base beer that tasting a certain way and you're happy with it, what else works on top of or in conjunction with the flavors of that base beer. And so even our wildest stuff has a good foundation underneath it, and that's the stuff that we advertise a little bit more and we bring to beer festivals and stuff. Like, that reputation is well earned. Like, we try and be a bit weird about things, but I am pretty happy that five of the six medals were for traditional styles, because it kind of showcases the other side of our brewery, which is when we want to take a run at something that's very well established, we look at the style guidelines, we taste the beers from the breweries that made those styles famous, and we, you know, we let that inform how the beer is going to go here moving forward.
Well, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
And this is how we close our show this week. Thanks to our journalists Tanya Organ, Ryan Funk, Brenda Little, Pamela Hassan, and Jacob Postlewaite. Our national editors are Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. It was a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for keeping us company again this week, and until the next chat.